Thank you, Dave. Good morning, everyone. If I do fall asleep, just lay me down in a quiet corner somewhere and I'm sure it'll be fine, not a problem. So I have a word for you this morning. This word contains two words. Oh, wow, they say two words. That'll be a short sermon then, won't it? Early lunch, good result. Sorry to disappoint you. There are only two words in this sermon, but we're going to take a bit of time and study them, find out what they mean. So I guess I should start by trying to find out what are our two words. Faith and hope. And I make no apologies for preaching on these two words, as I really do believe it's the word of God for today. Early this year, Pete preached on supernatural faith. Pete preached on faith for doing miracles. And 2 weeks ago, Dave preached on hope. And I think what I want to do today is to support what Pete's been preaching this year. And I think this word really helps you to understand the messages that he's been bringing earlier on in the year. So our two words. First word, faith, should be familiar to most Christians. The concept of faith is sort of fundamental, really, to being a Christian, to have faith. However, I think people are probably a bit less sure on the Christian meaning of hope. And in my experience, then, hope is not preached on as much as faith. So what we're going to do today is have a look at both words, see what they mean, and find out what the difference is between them. So where should we start? Well, we should start with the definition of faith. And that's easy, of course. It's Hebrews 11, verse 1, which says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." So let's start with the first one of those. The assurance of things hoped for. Now, there's a problem already. I've only read the first sentence of my notes and we've got a problem. How can that happen? Because it says, the assurance of things hoped for. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. So if you don't know what hope is and you don't know what the things hoped for are, then you can't know what faith is. And so there's a problem. So we need to find a way around that. What should we do? How about we just ignore it and go on to the second one? That solves the problem. In fact, we won't ignore it. What we'll do is we'll find out some more about hope and then we'll come back to the first one a bit later on. The second one is the conviction of things not seen. And this is easier to understand because we understand the idea that some things are not seen. So here's an example. Here's an example of faith. This example is used by lots of preachers. When you came in this morning, you sat on the chair. You didn't test the chair to see if it would take your weight. You just sat down. You sat down by faith that the chair would take your weight. Now, lots of preachers use this example, but it's actually not a very good example. Because the chair is a thing, but this says things not seen. The chair is a thing, but you can see the chair and you can touch the chair. And secondly, most of us have enough life experience to know what a good quality chair looks like and what a broken old chair looks like. If I gave you a broken down old chair to sit on, you might think, hey, that looks a bit dodgy. I might take a bit of care sitting on that. So although it is an example of faith, actually it's not a very good example of faith. Here's a better example of faith. Electricity. You can't see electricity. When you get home today, you might switch on the light or put on the kettle, but you don't see the electricity. You see the effects of the electricity. In the bulb, the electricity makes light. In the kettle, it makes heat. But you don't see the electricity. If you were to stick your fingers in the socket, you'd soon know there was electricity there. Don't try this at home, by the way. But you'd feel the electricity shooting up your right arm. But you'd still feel the effects of the electricity. You wouldn't see the electricity. There's lots of evidence for electricity. There are switches and wires and pylons in the countryside, but you still can't see the electricity. When you switch on the light, you switch it on by faith that the electricity will flow, but you can't see the electricity. And occasionally our faith is misplaced. Sometimes there's a power cut and you switch on the light and nothing happens. And that's very disappointing. So the electricity is an example of something that you have faith in because you can't see it. So what are the things that Christians have faith in? Christians have faith in things which are not seen. Here's a few of them. That Jesus was a real person. That Jesus was the Son of God. That he died and rose again. And that his sacrifice takes away our sins and makes us right with God. The important thing about all those things is that although we don't see them, they are really true. They're facts that actually happen. They really exist. But we just can't see them. And not being able to see them is actually a good thing in this context. In John 20, verse 29, Jesus says to Thomas, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." The people who saw Jesus when he was alive had a head start on us. They saw he was a real person and they saw the things he did. But they still had to believe by faith. They had to believe by faith that he was the Son of God. They had to believe by faith that his sacrifice paid for their sins. So they still believed by faith, but we are more blessed because we didn't see Jesus and yet we still believe. So the summary of the second point on the screen is that we believe by faith things that are not seen. But the things that are not seen are actual true facts that really happened. We believe them, but we just can't see them. So let's go on to the second point, the second words we're looking at today, which is hope. Here's a great verse about hope. It's Ephesians 1 verse 18. It says, "I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people." So this verse is amazing. It has lots of hidden depths. So let's try and take it to pieces in reverse order, starting at the end. So the bottom line says, he has called you. As a Christian, God has called you. You have a calling as a Christian. The next line says, the hope to which he has called you. There is a hope associated with your calling. This is the hope of your calling. And finally, it says at the top that you may know. You can know as a Christian what is the hope of your calling. And in fact, as a Christian, you really should know what is the hope of your calling. So what is our calling? This is what it says in 1 Peter 5 verse 10. It says, "The God of all grace who called you to his eternal glory in Christ. After you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm and steadfast." The ultimate calling for all Christians is that we are called to eternal glory. We're called to a place in heaven when we die. That's fantastic. And there are many sermons that could be preached on that, about life in heaven, the new Jerusalem, falling down and worshipping the Lamb on the throne. And there's so much more about life in heaven. It's all absolutely true and totally wonderful, but I'm not preaching that sermon today. I want to move on to something else to try and convince you of something else. Some Christians discover this hope, the hope of a life in heaven, and they think that's all there is. They think, I have salvation, I've got a place in heaven, job done, all sorted. Unfortunately, if you just stop there, you lose out on much of what God has for you. The hope to which he has called you is much greater than that. But some people don't realize it. So let's find out some more things that could be part of the hope of your calling. In John 14, verse 12, Jesus says, "Whoever believes in me will do the works I do, and they will do even greater things than these." In Matthew 17, verse 20, Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to here, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." And 1 John 5, verse 4 says, "For everyone born of God overcomes the world." This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it who overcomes the world? Only the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. And in that last verse, we get this concept that Christians can overcome the world. And I said I want to follow on some of the things that Peter preaches, and one of his favourite subjects he loves to preach on is the overcomer. And it comes from that verse, but a great deal of the concept of the overcomer comes from the seven letters to the seven churches in Revelation. And each of those letters concludes with a promise. And it says, to him who overcomes will receive a promise. And these promises in Revelation are sometimes collectively known as rewards in heaven. So if you're an overcomer, when do you receive your reward in heaven? When you get to heaven, of course. That's obvious, isn't it? But when do you do the overcoming? Do you do the overcoming in heaven, or do you do the overcoming here on earth? You do the overcoming here on earth first, and then receive your reward in heaven. And what about the other things that I read out? When do we do miracles like Jesus did? In heaven? No, in our life here on earth. When can we move mountains? In our life here on earth. In Philippians 3 verse 14, Paul puts it like this. I press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me. This is Paul's calling. When does Paul receive the prize that lies ahead? When he gets to heaven. And when does he press on? Here in his life on earth. What I want to try and convince you today is that the hope of your calling is more than just a place in heaven. Yes, it is that, absolutely, and that's one of the most important things. But the hope of your calling is about your life here and now. It's about living a vibrant, satisfying, meaningful and victorious Christian life right here, right now, here on earth. Here's another verse about hope. It's Romans 8, verse 24. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. So it says, who hopes for what they already have? We hope for things we don't have, things that we don't have. Now, this could be confusing, because we started with a verse that says, faith is about things that you can't see. And this says that hope is about things that you don't have. Things that you don't see, things that you don't have. What's the difference? Are they the same, faith and hope, or is there a difference? So, in order to understand that, we need an example of hope. And the example of hope is the Christmas present. Most of us are fortunate enough to have somebody who will give us a Christmas present. And in the run-up to Christmas, we look forward to receiving a Christmas present. We hope to receive a Christmas present. We don't know for certain we're going to get a Christmas present until it actually happens, but we hope to receive a Christmas present. You might be a list sort of person who writes Christmas lists, but you still don't know for certain you're going to get a present until you actually get it. Maybe on your list there's a choice of things. And it may be that you don't know which thing on your list you're going to get until you get it. So that in the run-up to Christmas, you hope to receive a Christmas present. Now, just forget Christmas for a moment, because here we are in the middle of July. And here's another story. Imagine about this. So imagine somebody comes up to you and says this. See this thing? I know you were thinking of asking for it for Christmas, but it seems such a shame that you had to wait that long. So I bought it for you now. Now, having a present in the summer is wonderful. This present may be extremely beautiful to look at. This present may be very practical and help you with your daily life. There's lots of good things about having a present in July. But there's a real downside. There's a real downside to the early Christmas present. Because the early Christmas present destroys hope. As it says in our verse, nobody hopes for what they already have. You can't hope to receive a Christmas present if you've had it already. So this tells us that hope is about the present, the things that we expect in the future. And we are saved with a hope. And we are saved with a hope to look forward to things in the future, things hoped for. And yes, one of those is a place in heaven when we die, but they include looking forward to a successful, victorious Christian life here on earth as well. That means we can go back to our first slide again and see if we can understand the top one, the assurance of things hoped for. Faith is the assurance of things we hope for, and those things are the things that we look forward to in the future. The assurance of things hoped for in the future. This allows us to make a distinction between the two sorts of faith on the screen there. It's a bit simplistic, but it really helps to understand the difference between the two. So the bottom type of faith is faith in things not seen. Those things are true now and they have really happened, just like the electricity, just like the life and death of Jesus. They are true facts that have actually happened right now, except that we just can't see them. The top kind of faith is faith in things in the future, things that haven't happened yet, things hoped for, like our place in heaven, and for many of us, doing miracles like Jesus did. The top kind of faith is faith for things in the future. Okay, the next step on the road is to understand the difference between worldly hope and Christian hope, because they are completely different. So what does the world hope for? The world hopes that the car will pass the MOT. The world hopes that they can afford the electricity bill. If they play the lottery, the world hopes that their numbers will come up. Worldly hope is not based on any substance. Worldly hope is entirely based on chance. Chance, fluke, luck, fingers crossed and hope for the best. Worldly hope is not based on any substance. Christian hope's not like that at all. Here's another verse about Christian hope. It's Titus 1 verse 1, where Paul says, "In the hope of eternal life, which God, who does not lie, promised before the beginning of time." There's that hope again. And there's that promise of a place in heaven again. But it's the promise of God. God is faithful and true and does not break his promises. The things we hope for are not based on chance or luck. The things that we hope for, the assurance of things hoped for, is based on the promise of God. And they are certain to happen because God is faithful and true and doesn't break his promises. The top kind of faith here on the screen is sometimes called faith in the promise. Faith in the promises of God. Faith in things hoped for, which we know will happen because God has promised them. So we could use with an example of that, couldn't we? That would help. So if I wanted to find a great man of faith, where would I look? Well, of course, that's easy. I would go to Abraham, the ultimate man of faith. And he's just a few verses on from us in Hebrews 11, verse 8. And it says this: "By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise, for he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God." So here's a good question about Abraham. We've got two types of faith on the board, on the top one and the bottom one. So which kind of faith did Abraham have? Did he have the top kind of faith or the bottom kind of faith? You see, the bottom kind of faith is faith in things not seen. And Abraham was called to go to a place not seen. It was certainly not seen by Abraham. He didn't know anything about it. He didn't know what it was like. He didn't know how far away it was. And he didn't know how long it would take to get there. But the answer to the question is, Abraham had the top kind of faith. The assurance of things hoped for. Because God promised Abraham he would take him to a land where his descendants would grow up to be more numerous than the sand on the seashore. Abraham had the top kind of faith. Abraham knew what was the hope of his calling. Abraham knew that the hope of his calling was about his life on earth, to follow God's promises to a new land. And Abraham did that with absolute, total, certain faith. Did Abraham know that the hope of his calling was also about a place in heaven? Yes, he did. That's what Hebrews 11 is all about. Abraham knew that the hope of his calling was about his life here on earth and also about a place in heaven in the future, just like us. So that allows us to make another distinction between these two kinds of faith. The bottom type of faith, faith in things not seen, is the faith that makes you a Christian. It's a faith in the things not seen, like the life and death of Jesus, and that makes you a Christian. But it doesn't mean that once you believe that, you don't need the bottom type of faith anymore. You need the bottom type of faith throughout your Christian life. Throughout our Christian life, we remember the things not seen, particularly when we do communion. We remember the death of Jesus, which is one of the things not seen. And that reminds us of that, and that builds our faith. And throughout our Christian life, we learn more and more about the things not seen, and that builds our faith as we go through our Christian life. The bottom sort of faith is the faith that makes you a Christian. The top sort of faith is the faith by which you live your Christian life. The faith for things hoped for, that our prayers will be answered, that we will do miracles, that we will outwork the purposes of God in our lives. The faith by which we live our daily lives, and the faith that is results in us being a successful, victorious Christian. Sadly, some people don't have the top sort of faith. Some people become a Christian and they have the bottom sort of faith, but they don't get the faith to live the victorious Christian life. And that's very sad, because they miss out on so much. And their Christian life is a shadow of what it really should be, because they don't have the top sort of faith. The successful Christian life needs both sorts of faith, the top and the bottom sort. So I'm just going to finish up with the last slide to pull this together and to summarise everything. So I hope it all makes sense. So here we have a slide with two columns. And these two columns represent two different sorts of Christians. The first one is a Christian who is faithful and hopeless. This is the column for a Christian who has faith, who is full of faith, but hasn't found that top kind of faith yet. They haven't found hope. They don't understand what is the hope of their calling. And the second column is a Christian who is faithful and hopeful. The Christian who knows what is the hope of their calling. So let's look at the two different sorts of Christian. The one on the left I've called a routine Christian. Now you think, that's a strange thing to say. What does that mean? Some of you might think I could call that person a nominal Christian. But that's not what I mean at all. A nominal Christian is often used as a term of insult for somebody who's lazy or not committed. And that's not what I mean at all. This person is full of faith. They have made a commitment to follow Jesus. They have the bottom sort of faith. They are real Christian. But their Christian life is routine. They come to church, but they do it out of routine, because it's the right thing to do. They might get blessed by singing some of their favourite songs. They might get blessed by a word of prophecy or by something in the sermon, but they're doing it out of routine. This person might go to midweek prayer meeting. They might go to house group. They might do their best to live a good life, but they do it out of routine because it's the right thing to do. Because they don't have the top sort of hope, they lack motivation. They don't have a hope for the future, and they don't have the motivation to lead the Christian life. In fact, they may think often, what's it all about? What am I doing here? What's this Christian life really like? As a result, they're unfulfilled. Their Christian life is not fulfilling. It might even be dull. In the worst case, it might even be boring, because they don't understand what is the hope of their calling, that they have the calling to a victorious and successful Christian life. And it may not be their fault. It may be that nobody's told them about the hope of their calling. It may be they became a Christian, and then if nobody told them that they can have a successful and positive Christian life, they don't know about it, because nobody told them. And as a result, these people are often rather negative and backward-looking. Because they don't have a hope for the future, the only assurance they have of their salvation is the time they got saved. And so they tend to be very backward-looking, looking back at the time they were saved and saying, was I really saved? Did it really happen? And that's the only assurance they have. And sadly, these people's lives are often built on sand. Because when hard times come or persecution comes, they may fall away. Why would you put up with hard times for something which, to be honest, isn't very satisfying in the first place? So now to the next column. These are people who are full of faith and full of hope. These people know what is the hope of their calling. And you can guess what goes in this column. I've called them the dynamic Christian, the Christian who understands the hope of their calling and puts it into practice. These people are motivated to find out what are the purposes of God and what's God's plan for their life. They're fulfilled because as they see this, they see God start to move, and they get fulfilled by seeing God's purposes being outworked in their life and seeing God moving. They're positive because it makes them positive and gives them a purpose to their lives. They're forward-looking because they're always looking forward, wanting to find out what's the next thing that God wants them to do. And everything in this column is all good news. But if I was to just preach good news without telling you if there's any bad news, then I wouldn't be telling the truth. So here's the first piece of bad news. The Christian life is sometimes hard. And there's a verse about that. It's Romans 5, verse 3. We also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. There's that hope again. Yes, there are sufferings and hardships. And living in the right-hand column doesn't make the hardship any less. The hardships are just as hard, but the hardships produce perseverance, character, and hope. And when this person goes through a hard time with a positive outlook, they expect God to move because they have hope, and they expect their prayers to be answered, and they expect to see miracles. Then when this starts to happen, it builds more hope, and hope builds faith. So they have more faith for God to move further and deeper and to see more things happen. And as they go through the hard time, they come out of it with more hope and with more faith. And therefore, they're stronger and more ready for the next time there's hardship. So this person is built on the rock because the hard times build their hope and build their faith, and they come out stronger and ready for the next time. And next time they have more expectation for God to move because they have more hope. And so they expect even greater things next time. The person we've left in the left-hand column, who is hopeless, has no expectation for God to move. And so the hardship's just as hard, but for the person in the left-hand column, it's just all bad news. And it can wear them down, and in the end it can even break them. The person who knows what is the hope of their calling is the person who's built on a rock. And here's another bit of bad news. The hope of your calling is a calling. It's God's calling on your life. And when God calls you to do something, he expects you to do it. If you want to please God, you've got to do what he asks. And if you don't do that, do what God asks you, then that doesn't please him. The hope of your calling is not an optional extra. You've been asked to find out what is the hope of your calling, and then go on and put it into practice. The hope of your calling is not an optional extra. So back to these two sorts of Christians. I said I was supporting the things that Pete was preaching. Pete loves to preach about things like living a supernatural Christian life, being an overcomer, seeing miracles on a daily basis. And I think it's easy to hear what Pete says and then think, maybe, I expect that's for some super special Christians who can do that. I'm not sure that's really for little old me. Well, now we can answer that question, because those things are not for super special Christians. They are for Christians who have hope. They're for Christians who understand what is the hope of their calling and put it into practice and realize that you can live a victorious Christian life right here and right now. This slide is very black and white. The person on the left is hopeless. They have no hope, zero hope. The person on the right is hopeful. They're full of hope, 100% hope. But in fact, most of us are not like that. Most of us are somewhere in between. We start on the left-hand column when we first become a Christian with a little bit of faith and a little bit of hope. And as we go through our Christian life, then ideally we should move to the right. Get more faith and more hope. And that helps us to move from the right-hand column, to move from one to the other. And to move from one column to the other, what do we need? We need more hope. Because hope builds faith. It allows us to lead a more successful Christian life. And that in turn, as it said in our verse in Romans, generates more hope, which generates more faith and allows us to move further into the column on the right. So I hope you got the message by now. The successful Christian life is about finding out what is the hope of your calling. And there's another challenging question today, of course. Which column are you in? Is your Christian life not as successful, dynamic and meaningful as it really should be? As you know in your heart, it should be better than that. Do you need more hope? We're all on this journey, and for all of us, we all need more hope.